Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Welcome back, everybody. You are here on the Up Your Brave show with Natalie Cutler-Welsh. Next up, I'm talking to John Alcock on the topic of the future of currency and the power of your vote. Welcome to the show, John.
Hi, Natalie. Thanks very much for having me.
I'm thrilled to dive into this topic. We're going to open up some conversation around currency, which I know is related to so many factors of our lives and also levels of stress for people. For those of you that may or may not know John, he has a diverse background in general management, legal advisory, compliance, dispute resolution, and business development, and brings a multifaceted approach to those roles. His career highlights include significantly increasing business revenue and managing complex negotiations, driving strategic growth initiatives as a BDM, a business development manager, for ACAMS. He successfully grew the New Zealand territory revenue by over 450% and increased membership tenfold. He's particularly proud of that role, as well as the expanding role with NZFIU and the conference. I'd love to hear more about the conference that he's part of, which is the largest anti-financial crime conference in the APAC region. Well, John, a lot of that is new to some of our listeners. Let's start off asking you a general question, because I know that you were recently elected as the leader for Rock the Vote NZ. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about that and your journey that led you towards this topic of the future of currency?
I suppose I've been sort of fairly heavily involved in politics for quite some time now. I've been a long-term ACT Party member, and I was on the board of the ACT Party sort of a couple of elections ago, and helped them manage the five elections out in sort of East Auckland. And that's when ACT got 10 MPs on board. So I'm pretty proud of helping ACT do that. And that's where my libertarian-leaning perspective sort of comes from. And recently, I've been contracted to the Association of Certified Anti-Money Laundering Specialists, which is ACAMS. I worked for them for the last 3 years and helped build the NZ Financial Police Financial Intelligence Unit Conference from a relatively small conference into the largest anti-financial crime conference in the whole of the Asia-Pacific region. So we had 680 virtual and in-person attendees last year. And this year, we've moved to a much bigger venue where we can host many more international and national speakers from all around the region. We hope to have way more people involved with it there this year as well. So expecting maybe 800 people this year.
Why do you think that is? Do you think there's a rise of awareness around the impact of, as you mentioned, money laundering and currency? Do you think it's a rising in awareness that more people are realizing that they need to be empowered in this area?
Both. It is rising in awareness in sort of the financial community. So that is all the banks and everything that we have to deal with there, knowing your customer, monitoring transactions, what their reporting obligations are. But it also severely impacts actual victims of financial crime. And so one of the topics that we have at the conference this year, we are going to talk directly to a victim, and she is going to be able to explain to all these financial institutions how important this actually is, because we're seeing an enormous rise in fraud and scams, particularly around digital currency, cryptocurrencies, but even just normal scams where people are getting involved in romance scams and sending money to people overseas, and they don't quite understand what they're doing. So it's really important to sort of prevent those side of things. And on top of that, which is something we never really talk about in New Zealand, which is not very good, but as economic conditions worsen, human trafficking and slavery and child sex trafficking increases. The New Zealand Customs Department, who I hosted at an event with KPMG last year, reported a 104% increase in human trafficking and child sexual abuse last year. That is 8,000 people in New Zealand. That is unacceptable.
I absolutely agree. The numbers are staggering. Why? Tell me about the correlation. So you said when the financial strife is happening, when things are harder in the economy, then there's a correlation. So the percentage or the number of people involved in trafficking increases. Can you talk me through that?
Yeah, so that is just simply a function of people experiencing the cost of living. And as things become more difficult and people lose their job, as unemployment increases, as people have to pay more taxes, have the less disposable income, they inevitably end up looking around for other ways to generate income, which pushes them into more gray or really black areas of the economy that we don't really want to be involved in. More people get involved in drug crimes. They get involved in sex trafficking. They get involved in human slavery because they're trying to squeeze the last bit of resources out of any people that they're involved with. We see that all the time. I mean, look at what's happening in New Zealand politics right now, without naming any specific names. I think we all know who I'm referring to. And that is an actual sitting MP who refuses to resign.
So that's right. So people take desperate measures, both in terms of putting themselves in volatile positions, but also being taken advantage of in these crazy times. And Is that also part of the financial crimes that are happening, is that people are a little bit more desperate? So they get some email that says that there's some money waiting for them, or someone else really needs money, and they send it. People are just there. Maybe their intuition is a little bit off, or it's harder to reconcile what's true.
It always seems like a really good investment opportunity. And that's probably one of the most common types of scams and fraud. I've just been dealing with one just the other day. And an older woman, she had some cryptocurrency, she had some Bitcoin, and she sent it to an investor. I use that term very loosely, from overseas, called her, made it sound great, said, here's the returns on your investment, give us this amount of money, and that's immediately a scam. If they had done a straight up Google search, every search result is, this is a scam, don't do it, this is a scam, don't do it. But because people are desperate, because they're down to their last little amount of money, they see a return and go, oh, I can make some money. And when that happens, you take more risks and you don't quite think as clearly as you normally would.
It's easy to see how it can happen for people. What are there some specific things that people can do? I mean, Googling is one thing, but I don't even trust Google entirely myself. So are there some specific things that people can do if they have an opportunity present to them and they're just not sure if it's legit? What is the best step forward?
Number one, Google it. Even if you don't trust Google, it's not like you're looking for biased political resources here where Google might do funny things with the algorithm. What you're looking for is have a bunch of organizations flag this as an obvious scam. So it's still really good for that. But you can use any search engine you like. Just stick the name of the company there. Have a look first. The other thing, rule of thumb, never click any links in any texts or any emails unless you are absolutely sure who it is coming from. And try not to send money to people you don't know, sort of outside the country. That is not a good start down those kind of links. And if you do those kind of things, you'll be protected against a lot of the really low-hanging fruit scams. And remember that these scammers, they don't want to put any time, energy, or effort into these scams. That's minimal investment energy, maximum return. So if you just do those things, you make yourself too difficult to pursue. So that's where I'd start. But be aware of your surroundings, be aware of who you're dealing with, be aware of where you're sending your money. If you are doing something like that, start with a really small amount that you're prepared to lose. It's not that everything it's a scam, it's that a lot of them are.
Well, it's tricky to decipher, but I think those are good tips, obviously, so you can Google it. The golden rule of don't send money overseas to people you don't know is a good one. But the links, that's interesting, isn't it? So people will send an email. I mean, often I'll get a text and it says, oh, you haven't paid this thingy, or, you know, this is overdue. And then I often will screenshot it and send it to my husband and I'll be like, is this legit? Is this a scam? And he's like, yes, it's a scam. Yes, it's a scam. it's hard for people to know. I guess the main thing is if you don't know the person, they're not like a legit person, don't click the link. What happens when they do click the link?
If you click the link, they can often install malware onto your phone or onto your computer, which may include sort of key logging information. So they can siphon off passwords and things like that as well. But also they're starting you down that process of trying to convince you that they're trustworthy and to give you bank details and those kind of things. The most common one that I get, and it happens on my cell phone all the time, is you'd have a package from DHL. It's like,
yes.
Well, no, I don't. So if you see any of those, the easiest thing to do, block number, report spam. That's it. You never get another text from that specific address again. But it happens to everybody. It happens to me. None of us are immune. Just be careful.
I mean, I think it's easy to see how that can cause a lot of strife and stress for people. Even my dad was at the warehouse one time with my mom and they were buying something. And as they were leaving, they saw a sign that said, like, log into the warehouse app or something like that. And he's standing in the warehouse and he Googles warehouse.co.nz, but it was some other scam address that was using a similar variation of that URL. He signed up, I don't know, one, you know, credit card number later. And suddenly he realized it was a scam and he was able to get his money back. But a lot of people wouldn't realize straight away and a lot of people would lose little bits of money. But for the scammer, it all adds up.
It does. That's what they're relying on. But a lot of people lose a lot of money. There are the cases out there where people have lost $300,000-$400,000 to these scams. And this is somebody's entire life savings. This is their retirement fund. And that completely destroys them. And there's always this, when it happens to you, and it's happened to me as well, I'm not immune from this. Even though I know a lot about this area, I'm not immune either. It has happened to me before. And there's this huge feeling of shame and that, oh no, I've been conned, I've been scammed, I've been duped. And people don't want to tell anybody else about it. But you're not alone. There's a lot of us out there. Most people have come across a scam at some stage. Some people have been caught by it. But it is something that if we are more aware and we're able to discuss these kind of things more openly, like at the conference, then we can be more aware of what is going on. And that helps us protect ourselves against these things happening in the future as they change little things. So that makes it more tempting for us to do it. But yeah, if somebody's offering you more than 10% returns on your investment, scam. Don't do it.
For those of you listening, I'm sure some of you can relate. You might be sitting there thinking, oh, yep, that was me. But I agree with you, John. It's like, put the shame, if you can, park the shame and just protect someone else with your story and say, hey, I feel a bit silly, but I fell for this. I just want to make sure you don't as well. If anyone has any experiences they want to share, then you can send us a text, 2057, or inbox at realitycheck.radio. I'm intrigued to talk a little bit more about the crypto thing because, I mean, I've had a guest previously talk about crypto. I've purchased some crypto, but I'm not really, I have no idea. I've also purchased some silver. So I feel like I'm covering my bases, but I don't really know about how do people know who to trust when it comes to both of those things, purchasing silver or gold or crypto or Bitcoin. Again, how do you know who to trust?
The best thing about the blockchain and the whole point of it really is that it is zero trust. You don't need to know anyone or trust anyone because every single transaction on, for example, the Bitcoin blockchain is public. I use that now to deal with everybody. That is my primary sort of form of currency. All my transactions are technically public. I can go and look up other people's wallet addresses. I can look up transaction IDs. I can ensure that those transactions have proceeded. And I need not now actually trust anyone to do their transactions because we can see that. And so that is the best thing about using the blockchain. And it's the advantage over trading in gold and silver because while you have those physical assets, how do you tell the purity of the gold bar that somebody sent to you? Look at the Perth Mint. They've been shaving off little bits of gold to save hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Well, now how do you trust the Perth Mint? A huge multinational organization like that. It's like, well, in Bitcoin, I don't have to. Why? Because as long as the transaction is completed, I know that it's permanently intelligible, that everybody can see this transaction has happened, and I know that I've received or sent the funds.
So transparency is the key, that trust through the transparency.
Yeah. Yeah. There's 8 billion of us on this planet now, and we've got into the situation where it is literally impossible for us to know and have full trust in everybody around us. Hmm. So moving to an environment where we don't have to do that is sort of a move in the right direction. A decentralized environment, I don't have to trust the Reserve Bank of New Zealand with my Bitcoin. I don't have to trust anyone except myself. That's the only person I have to trust. And if you don't trust yourself, then I think you might need to do a little bit of soul searching there.
Yes, I agree. I agree. What other guidance can you give our listeners around this topic of currency and awareness and avoiding becoming a victim of financial crime? Anything else about that before I move on to talk a little bit more about voting with your dollars?
I think really just make sure you're aware as possible. And if these things do happen to you, please share them with your friends and say, hey, these are the texts I've been getting. I blocked all of those. If you get those similar texts, make sure that you tell people about them. If you get a scam that is pretending to be your bank, make sure you tell your bank about that, because there are lots of people in the financial crime industry that will actually do something about that and make changes on their end to try and protect us from those criminal elements that are trying to steal our wealth.
What about IRD in New Zealand, the Inland Revenue Department? Are people receiving hoax things from them as well, or...?
They most certainly are. The IRD is in no way immune from this. Mm-hmm. And you should be very careful about any email that has a link that purports to be from the IRD. Make sure it is coming from an actual IRD email address, which will be at ird.gov.nz. Make sure it says that. Make sure all the periods are in the correct place. That's something they often do. And honestly, copy the link out of the email instead of clicking on it.
Okay.
And then go and put it in a web browser that you're comfortable with instead of clicking it. That is a better way to do it, because it allows you to see the whole link before you press enter and go to that site. And make sure you read it. Make sure you check it. Just read the sort of front half, ird.gov.nz. Okay, well, we're probably on a good email there. And just be aware, there's nothing you can do to stop 100% of this from happening. Mm. At some stage, you'll be busy, you'll click on something, you'll be in a rush, and it will happen. So just try your best to protect yourself as much as you can.
Great. Those are some really good actionable tips, and that's things I like to give to my listeners, is specific things they can do. So just to recap on those two things you just said, in the email, go to the sender email address and look at what it's actually comprised of, because sometimes it'll just say the name, but if you click on it, and then you're saying, don't just click the link, copy the link, paste it into a browser you trust, and look at the actual URL, and does it look like gobbledygook weird, or does it look correct? Those are just two little steps you can take that might save you a lot of strife.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit more about voting. So you were recently elected as leader of Rock the Vote, so massive congratulations, Rock the Vote NZ.
Thank you.
I know it's been many years in the buildup. And so I'd love for you to just tell us a little bit more about what that means, your role, but also what is Rock the Vote NZ? And then I'm going to segue into voting with your dollar.
So Rock the Vote NZ sort of started partway through last year, a little bit for the election cycle that we've just been through. And what they're trying to do is to gather like-minded individualists together in such a way that we can make an impact on New Zealand's political climate. And I had a separate party before then, but we've now merged together and been elected leader of Rock the Vote in New Zealand. And we joined with Freedoms New Zealand as coalition partners with Vision and the Tamakis and Sue Gray from the Outdoors and Freedoms Party. And what we were trying to do, which is very, very difficult, is to get individualists like us together in one place so that we could get just one MP into Parliament. Would be great. And all together across all the Freedom parties, we got about 5.5% of the vote. So I think we actually did extremely well for people with very low brand recognition, almost no money, no funds behind us, trying to scrape things together sort of into the election period. I stood in the Pakeranga electorate, didn't expect to win it. Simeon Brown's always going to win that. No problem there. But I got 150% more votes than I expected.
Wow.
So I think I did actually quite well out of that. And I will continue to stand up for individual property rights is really the main driver of this message.
So do you feel like the vibe has shifted since the election in terms of unity? Do you feel like, you know, because people were kind of spread out and there were different parties, there were so many different parties that with that diluted vote conundrum. But do you feel like since then, especially with Rock the Vote, that it's been able to bring people together and it's looking more positive for the future?
I think we are the primary party that is doing that, actually. I have had a chat with the leaders of all of the other parties, and we're the only ones that have networking connection with every single one of the Freedoms parties. And I have my diaries now booked out with meetings of all the leaders of the Freedoms parties to try and bring us together. And I think the thing that separates us from the dispersed vote and sort of disagreement we get in the Freedom community is the focus on currency as the sort of loose association point that can bring us together without subsuming anybody else's individual identity. I don't want to take away from Outdoors and Freedoms. I don't want to take away from Vision. I don't want to take away from NZ Loyal or the Democratic Alliance. But the thing that we can do together is start using a currency that is politically neutral, such as Bitcoin. That's where I'm going with this, really. And that is how we can loosely associate with each other without you necessarily having to agree with everything that I say. And being individualists and libertarians, we are never going to agree on 100% of things. So don't. Just start trading with us. We should all just trade with each other in a stable, transparent, open currency such as Bitcoin.
So currency is the common connector. And I love that. You're like, don't try to agree on everything. Just start working together in terms of trading. Okay. And how is that? Tell me a little bit more about the currency piece there, because obviously everyone uses money. Everyone uses money to purchase, you know, goods and services and get by. How do you see that rolling out in terms of the positive impact that we can have just by doing what you're saying, which is trading with each other, using something like Bitcoin?
We could have previously used actual New Zealand dollars for this purpose as well. That's something that Liz Gunn from NZ Lawyer will always point out. She's always been in favor of cash. But the unfortunate problem with that now is the inflation. And because we have, 7% reported inflation, I'm sure we're all feeling a lot more than that. I know that my shopping bills have doubled in the last year. That's 100% inflation. Because of this inflationary effect of all the printing that Labour and the Greens did during while they were in Parliament, we can't trust that currency anymore because every day it decreases in value. And that is because we have a connection, a strong connection between our politicians and our government, and they want to keep their jobs. And so their incentive is to promise a bunch of things that they can't pay for, which results in money printing, which results in inflation, which results in all of us being in a literal depression in New Zealand right now and being unable to live. So because we can't use cash anymore, the next best alternative that is out of the hands of any politician, including me or anybody else, is Bitcoin. It is open, public, transparent, and no politician has any control over it at all. And just like we have separation of state and religion, we now also need separation of state and economics.
Let's go a little bit Bitcoin 101 here. If someone's listening and they're like, I don't really know what you mean. I know it's a digital thing. How does someone get started? If they're like, okay, John, I hear what you're saying. And I hear that I'm making myself kind of, even though cash is king, I hear what you're saying about inflation and the problem there. How do I get started? So how does someone get started with Bitcoin?
The easiest way to do it at the moment would be go to wirexapp.com. Mm-hmm. And follow the instructions there. Use the app. They have a partnership with Visa, and they're working on a partnership with MasterCard. And that will allow you to purchase Bitcoins through their exchange application. And it will also allow you to order a Wirex Visa card, which you can use anywhere that Visa accepted to spend your Bitcoins directly. That's the bridge. That is the bridge between fiat currency and Bitcoin. Eventually, the idea is we don't need Visa anymore. You and I have a transaction. I want to buy a business consultancy services from you. I just pay you directly with Bitcoin, and that is a peer-to-peer transaction that doesn't involve third parties. But we need a bridge to go from the current system to that system. And at the moment, as far as I can tell, Wirex is the best app that I can use right now. There are other ones, and there will be a lot more in the future, including probably from our major banks as well. They are going to get on board at some stage. And so you need to pick the one that is ultimately best for you, but that's a great place to start.
Okay. And I hear what you're saying about it being a bridge because it's something people already know how to use. They have like a plastic FPOS card or credit card. So they would get the Wirex and they would load up some money onto that Wirex. Is that what you're saying?
Yep. So the way that I do it is I use my credit card issued by my bank, which is also a Visa card, and I use it to buy a small amount of cryptocurrency when I sort of feel like it, when I have a little bit of extra cash. And I have now accumulated to the point where I can use my Wirex Visa card to pay for pretty much everything that I do, including my income taxes to the IRD.
Interesting.
I paid my income tax this year. I paid in Bitcoin, and the IRD received New Zealand dollars into their bank account. Perfect.
I'm keen to ask you, I don't know if this is something that you do. Do you do trainings on this, like where people actually get to be on a webinar or ask you questions, or is it more of a one-on-one consultation situation?
All of the above. I do crypto 101, 202, and 303 sessions. So this is probably closer to 101, but Rock the Vote hosts these events for me, and anybody is welcome to come and join us and ask me any questions. I will literally show you my Bitcoin transactions because they're all public anyway. So if you'd like to see what I'm doing, you can see that. I have no problem with that at all.
Okay. In a moment, I'll ask you how people can get in touch. But before we do that, anything else you want to say around the power of your vote and even voting with your money, which is kind of what we're talking about? You know, what we spend money on, we're going to perpetuate more of that in society.
Yeah, I see a lot of calls from a lot of democratic organizations asking for binding citizens' referenda. And while that seems like a great idea in principle that we ask as politicians, we ask the people what they want and then actually go and do the thing that the people have asked for. The primary issue with that is it is centralizing those powers and decision making into, instead of the new current New Zealand government, whichever party you like, it doesn't really matter. But instead of centralizing that, it's centralizing it in somebody else's hands. So be centralizing in my hands. And then I can really use that referenda question to frame what I'm trying to get to, and by framing it in a certain way, produce the results that I want. So it's not really a democratic process. And my point to these organizations really is, this already exists. Why are we trying to reinvent the wheel? If you want a polling platform, every social media platform has a straw polling way that you can record votes from people to see general intentions. But the way to do actual democracy is direct democracy, is to get everybody to vote with sovereign money that they personally and individually hold, and then they can vote for whatever it is that they like through their transactions. If you like The Warehouse, buy from The Warehouse. If you like Briscoe's, buy from Briscoe's. If you like me, buy my goods and services. If you don't like any of these things, don't buy from them. And that is the most direct form of democracy that we can have with the least amount of centralization and the least amount of interference.
Wouldn't you say that that's already a thing? Like, people are already have the capacity to do that. They might not view it that way, but they might go, you know, where you're spending your dollars, you're essentially voting. Is it a mindset shift, or is it something you think we're going to move more towards as a system?
From your income every year, how much does the government take from you?
Too much.
They're literally eroding your democracy by taxing you at the top tax rate. What's that, 54% at the moment?
I think I'm on 30-something myself for my business.
Yeah, so that's 45%, right? Because you've got to include GST. And that doesn't include fuel tax. It doesn't include alcohol tax. It doesn't include cigarette tax. It doesn't include the myriad of other taxes that exist there. I think I told David Seymour that 3 election cycles ago now, when I had a meeting with him, said, David, on average, I pay 66.7% of my income in tax every year, which means my voting power has been almost completely eroded and confiscated from me by whatever government happens to be in charge at the time. We need to take back that sovereignty and take back control of our wealth, money, and resources ourselves so that we can properly participate in democracy. Because let's say you're a Greens Party supporter. Well, you definitely don't support the government at the moment. you definitely don't support ACT and New Zealand First and National and their policies, but they are still stealing from you nearly half of your income every year. And they're applying it to policies that ACT supporters like. But that doesn't work for the Greens. It doesn't work for Labor. It doesn't work for ACT when the Greens are in charge. An election cycle ago, when it was Labor and the Greens. Now they're stealing half of my income to pay for Green policies that don't really do anything, that I definitely don't support. So it doesn't matter which side of the political aisle you're on. This is relevant to all of us. And I love David Seymour's recent comment about Te Pāti Māori, which was fantastic. Stood up and said, when they declared their own little sovereignty, he said, you can have whatever sovereign parliament you like, but I'm not paying for it. I agree, David. I agree. None of us should have to pay for policies that we don't agree with, and we should be able to vote with our wallet for those things that we do like, and we should be able to choose not to vote for the things that we don't like. But until the confiscation of our wealth stops by government means, because they control our monetary supply with inflation on top, that's another 7% tax per year. Until we take back control of our own money ourselves and take back control of our democracy as individuals, we don't have the right to vote for the things that we like. It is taken off us by whoever the current government is. So if you're a Greens or a Labour Party supporter, why are you paying for National Party policies? If you're a National Party supporter, why do you pay for Labour Party policies? We all need to stop doing this and take back the control from all of our politicians.
So how do you suggest we do that? How do we stop doing that and take back the power and control?
Move all of your fiat currency into bitcoins. That's how we do it. Bitcoin is a sovereign currency.
It sounds simple.
It is really that simple. Go and buy some bitcoins, buy $100 worth. I think that's the minimum amount on Wirex. That's not too much if you can afford to sort of lose that. Go and buy some, order yourself a Visa card and see how easy it is to do transactions. If you look at my accounting services, for example, all my services I offer both in New Zealand dollars and in bitcoins. People can choose to pay me in the currency that they find most acceptable. And that is how I'm trying to encourage people, and particularly business owners, to transact in the future. Stick a QR code on your desk for your Bitcoin wallet. Then people just scan the code, transfer it straight through to you. Transaction is done. No third-party involvement. It's as easy as I'm making it sound.
Okay, this might be a beginner's question, but I have no shame, so I'm just going to ask. It's interesting timing, though, because I actually got a Wirex card, I'm going to say 2 years ago, when I got some crypto, and I really haven't looked at it since. So I'm re-inspired by chatting with you. What about tax? So meaning tax in terms of business transaction, like if you're GST registered, like me.
If you're doing business transactions and this is part of your income, then it is captured under the Income Tax Act and you should correctly be paying tax on that income. Whereas if you look at what I'm doing at the moment, well, aside from my business activities, which I pay tax on, to the IRD in bitcoins, which I think is hilarious, but it works.
I like that.
Yeah, it's great. That is taxable income that I should be paying tax on, and I should correctly be charging and collecting GST on that income. For the bitcoins that I've bought with fiat currency, I've already paid my income tax on that because I've received New Zealand dollars. I have paid my income tax to the IRD on that money, and then I have gone and bought some bitcoins. But I'm not selling those bitcoins. So there's no taxable income there.
Yeah.
I'm not trading. I don't sell back to New Zealand dollars when it goes up. Some people do. But if you do that, that's income. But I don't ever sell back to New Zealand dollars. What I do when I'm transacting with my Wirex card is Visa is charging me a certain amount of bitcoins, which I've already paid tax on. And then on the back end, Visa is doing a transaction from bitcoins to New Zealand dollars on their end. It has nothing to do with me. It is not taxable income. My bitcoins haven't really changed in value aside from the inflation caused by new fiat currency. It's not an income. What the IRD is interested in and what you see in news articles is people who are trading bitcoins. Mm-hmm. That is income. that is correctly income as well, because they are making a profit off the activity of trading. So if that's your thing and you'd like to do that, you need to pay income tax on that. That's just the way that it is. What I usually recommend for the rest of us who have other businesses, that's not our primary method of generating income, is don't trade, because it makes it very complicated and you do have to keep a record of every single one of your transactions. Mm-hmm. And you do have to keep a record of your profit, because that's your income. But I don't trade at all. I only buy Bitcoins with money that I've already paid tax on, and I only spend them when I go and buy something, and I'm not selling back to New Zealand dollars.
Thank you for the clarification. If you just joined us, you are listening to the Up Your Brave show here on Reality Check Radio. I'm talking to John Alcock today about the future of currency and the power of your vote. And we would love to hear your thoughts and your questions. If you've got questions or your own experiences, you can send us a text 2057 or email inbox at realitycheck.radio. John, I would love to ask you a few questions, including how can people get in touch? How can people get in touch if they want to learn more about this or just need some guidance in this area?
The best way to get in touch with me at the moment is via the Rock the Vote New Zealand website. So that's www.rockthevotenz.org.nz. And we have a contact form on there. You can also see what our principles are as well. You can see upcoming events that we host and keep in touch with us there, or via our Facebook page, which is just Rock the Vote New Zealand.
Are some of your upcoming events in person or are they all online?
They are mostly in person. Mm-hmm. We have a few venues that we use mostly around Auckland, sort of 30 to 40 person capacity. Everybody is welcome to come and join us. Everybody is welcome to ask questions. And this covers more than just cryptocurrency. We talk about health and wellness. We talk about spirituality. We talk about philosophy. Those are probably the ones that I find most interesting. The philosophy of how our world operates and things that are of interest to all our membership. So it's not just all about cryptocurrency.
That sounds right up my alley, and I know a lot of my listeners will relate to that as well. Quick shout out to Mike, who connected us. I met Mike at a RCR event. It was the Say No to the Who event. We met in person, and I approached him to be a guest, and he recommended you. So I wanted to do a quick shout out to him. A little bit more on your conference, please. So what is coming up? What else is coming up? And are you on social media that we should follow you on as well?
I am on Facebook, and I do have Instagram and TikTok accounts as well. But the best place is to follow us on Rock the Vote. That is where most of the information sort of comes out there as well. But you're welcome to come and follow me on Facebook. That is a public profile. So I post interesting and sometimes spicy memes on there. Mm. And that's where it sort of comes from. But that's sort of quite fun. And you can get in touch with me there as well. It does take me some time to respond to messages because there's quite a lot of them.
All good. Okay. Can you let us know a little bit more about the conference and who that is for?
So the conference is coming up at the end of October, and it's an open invitation to anybody that is in financial services. It is hosted by the New Zealand Police Financial Intelligence Unit. And so everybody is vetted when they come to this conference, and you do need to be in the financial services sort of area, or a high value goods trader, money remittant businesses, those kind of things. But I'd love to encourage anyone that is in that area to please book it into your diaries. It's the 30 and 31st of October. And it is an excellent event where we can share and communicate and try to prevent financial crime as much as possible. I'm a huge supporter of this conference for that reason, and the work that we're all trying so hard to do there in these sort of financial services areas.
It sounds like an amazing event. Is it in Auckland or Wellington?
It's in Wellington at the Takina Events Centre. And the best place to see the links for those is probably if you follow me on LinkedIn. Just John Alcock is my profile. It's also very public. Contact details there as well.
Any spicy memes on LinkedIn as well?
No, not on LinkedIn. LinkedIn's for business purposes, isn't it? It's only the really weird, boring, sort of semi-creepy memes that go up there, isn't it? The corporate ones.
All good. All right, John, if you were to truly up your brave in 2024, the remaining months, what would you do?
Buy Bitcoin. It seems scary. It's relatively new, but we're 2024 now. It's been around for a while. I think it's proven itself. It's got buy-in from every major financial institution in the entire world, including governments as well. We know where this is going. The future is going to be some kind of blockchain-based currency, and Bitcoin is going to probably be the one that backs everything else. Central bank digital currencies are coming. They are inevitable as well. They may have a very good use case in some certain situations. But at this stage, I'm not prepared to get involved with those. So I'm trying to exit my New Zealand dollar position as much as I can and get into Bitcoin for the moment. Bitcoin is the only one that I'd focus on as well. And it does take a bit of courage to move away from a financial system that you've been using your entire life and come and use a new financial system that is a little bit scary, but just start small and we can do this and take back control of our finances.
Do you think there's something to be said for getting into Bitcoin as a way to not have all your eggs in one basket, meaning all your eggs in the bank account, bank basket?
Well, we all know that you shouldn't just keep fiat currency. This is something that we've been told our entire lives. What do you do? You've got to invest it. Why? Because the inflation rate is stealing your money every year. So people buy property, people buy houses, people buy gold, people buy silver, people buy boats and cars, things that they enjoy. Great. In uncertain financial times, you should have a bit of diversity in your portfolio. You should hold a bit of the things that you like, real world assets that you think are going to have value into the future. And property is the big one, if you can afford to buy it. But gold and silver fall into that category as well. But you can't spend gold and silver at your local dairy, yeah, or at Gull or at BP. But I can spend my Bitcoins there. So come and join me and see what it's like on this side of the fence. It's going to be the way we transact in the future anyway. And central bank digital currencies are coming. So all your cash is going to be a digital currency in the next couple of years. That's how fast it's going to come. That's what's going to happen. And as I've said before, like, look, you like act like National? They're going to do central bank digital currencies. Okay. Seems great. Maybe David gets beneficiaries off the benefit. Maybe that is a thing that you like. But maybe you're a Labour Party supporter and you don't want David Seymour's restrictions on beneficiaries. Maybe you're a welfare recipient yourself. Maybe you need that money to survive and get by. And what you don't want to be using is a central bank digital currency that limits your transactions to things that David Seymour likes. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. If you're an ACT Party supporter and Chloe Swarbrick is in charge and she gives a whole bunch of benefits to beneficiaries and you don't like that, but maybe you're a beneficiary and you do like that, then you don't want to be forced into a situation where you now have to do Chloe Swarbrick's policies. And this should be a bipartisan issue. We shouldn't be allowing our politicians to have whims and controls over our personal finances, no matter which side of the aisle you're on.
Well, that's so true. And I wanted to ask you one wrap-up question before I ask you for any final words. What do you see for the future of politics?
That is a very interesting question, particularly with all the stuff that's happening in America just over the last couple of days. And unfortunately, what happens in the US affects us around the world. So I would like to reduce the amount of power that politicians have to the maximal amount, because it causes a split between all of us as individuals in whatever country that we're living in. If your prime minister or your president or whatever kind of person that is so critically important that you're willing to shoot each other, kill each other, and commit violent acts on other individuals, we cannot have a political system that is so important that that happens. We have to go back to resolving our disputes via non-violent means. And the primary method of doing that is to take power away from the hands of politicians. And the basis for that is taking away their funding. We should be able to choose individually rather than try and force our electoral will onto half the country through a tyranny of the majority. Look at what's happening in the US. This is unacceptable in a modern society.
Well, thank you for highlighting the power, the potential for power that we have when it comes to currency and how we can use our own, the way that we spend to impact what happens. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before we wrap it up?
I don't think so. I think we've covered a lot of sort of very broad topics here today. And if they want to get in touch and talk more deeply about this, come and get involved. Come and get involved with us at Rock the Vote. Come to some of our events. Listen to Reality Check Radio for differing perspectives on how things are sort of playing out. And listen to perspectives that are not mine. Listen to perspectives that are not yours, most importantly, so that you get a different view of how other people see the world, so that you can better understand maybe why people are doing what they're doing.
Wise words. Thank you so much. And thank you for the endorsement of RCR. It's true. We have talked about CBDCs and a whole bunch of other things related to this topic. So what I'm going to do, everybody, on the replay page, I usually put, if you like this, you'll also like that. And I put a few links that you're welcome to click. It's totally safe. I put a few links to other interviews that either myself or other hosts have done. So you can check those out later. Thank you so much, John, for joining us today.
Thanks very much, Natalie. Take care.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to, dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you. So connect with us today.